You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation, and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view. The people who work in the prison system would have another. And I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island, to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4pm on your community radio, 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
Hello and welcome to the Doin' Time Show. This is 3CR Community Radio, 855am on the dial, streaming live on www.3cr.org.au. And a warning that this episode of Doin' Time contains audio images of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who have died and graphic discussion of deaths in custody. It will also, I just wanted to issue a content warning as well, that there will be a discussion about refugees and asylum seekers as well who have undergone cruel treatment. This is Marissa and I will be with you for the next hour. On today's show, you will first hear an interview with David Glance from the Refugee Action Collective about its latest media release, Football Players Need a Level Playing Field, and so do all Iranian refugees. We will discuss RAC's call, along with other refugee organisations, for the government to grant permanent protection for all asylum seekers fleeing the Islamic Republic of Iran. And I just wanted to also send out a quick cheerio to Tabitha Lean, First Nations activist who does a lot of work in the prison arena. She's quite unwell and was unable to do our interview this afternoon, but she'll be back next week. After David, we'll have a big yarn with Kelly Flanagan, First Nations activist and member of Fig Jam Collective, and Karen Fletcher, who is the CEO of Flat Out, about the Victorian Government's Corrections Amendment Bill 2026, the No Air in Prison Bill, seeking to strip away one of the few minimum protections for people in prison, the right to have at least 1 hour each day in the open air, by qualifying that it will be subject to the vague and elastic concept of operational considerations. I'm delighted to welcome David to the program, and we had him last week actually speaking about a couple of events that were coming up. But David is quite a regular guest on this show. He's becoming part of the furniture, and I'm welcoming him to the program now. Hello, David.
Hello, Marissa. Yes, I am an old sofa. You're correct.
Lovely to have you. David, would you just be able to give us some background about the media release put out by the Refugee Action Collective about what's happening with Iranian asylum seekers?
Yeah, for sure. Now, listeners might remember back in March that a whole bunch of Iranian football players, women football players, who were here for the Asian Cup competition, refused to sing the national anthem and then requested asylum, because they didn't want to go back to Iran under the current authoritarian regime. And a whole bunch of them sort of had second thoughts. They may have been pressured, they may have been threatened, we don't know. But most of them actually changed their minds and went back to Iran. But two women stood their ground and requested asylum here in Australia. And last week, the Minister for Home Affairs, Tony Burke, gave them Australian citizenship, made sure he was photographed with them as they celebrated getting their citizenship. Now,
and that's a good thing.
I was about to say, Refugee Action Collective has no problem with that. Our problem is there are lots of other Iranians who have fled persecution, torture, in fear of their lives. Some of them are political minorities, some are religious minorities, some are from the Kurdish regions. A whole hundreds of Iranians who are still in limbo waiting for the government to show the same empathy and support that Tony Burke gave to those two footballers last week. So our beef isn't with the footballers. Mm. Our beef is with the Labour government failing to treat other refugees as in need of help and taking their case seriously. And we've seen this before. They tend to cherry-pick individuals who where they think they'll get some good media. So one of those was a good thing. It was the Bilawila family up in Queensland. When Labor was first elected 4 years ago, Anthony Albanese flew up to Queensland, met the family, a family that had been living in Australia but was going to be deported. And because there was a very big campaign, the Bilawila family became front of mind, and so the government got some brownie points for giving them protection. Similar thing happened, you might remember, a couple of years ago. There was somebody went crazy in a shopping centre in Sydney and was knifing people. Mm. And one guy stepped in, was part of actually trying to deal with the issue, and he was from overseas. Yep. And the government stepped in and made him a citizen to thank him for what he'd done. So they pick and choose individuals where they think they can get positive publicity, but behind the scenes there are many, many hundreds, in fact, across all nationalities, thousands of refugees whose lives are in limbo. But just to concentrate on the Iranians, we believe that there are hundreds who have been in limbo in Australia since 2013. People who made it here, their claims for asylum were rejected under a system set up by the Liberal Party where refugees were set up to fail. They then stayed on bridging visas. There are hundreds of them living amongst us, our friends, our neighbours, our workmates, in some cases, although not all of them have the right to work. And they've been waiting 13 years for an outcome, and the government is ignoring them. And then there are another 183 Iranians who have made it as far as Indonesia, but Australia has basically banned genuine refugees coming from Indonesia to Australia. So they're stuck in Indonesia, where they can't work, they can't study, they can't marry. And then there are 86 more Iranians who are detained inside Australia. So you add it up and you're looking at hundreds and hundreds of Iranians, many of them with refugee status. In fact, most of them with refugee status. They are refugees. The government doesn't argue that they are not refugees, but it's refusing to give them safe haven and permanent protection. So if it's good enough for the footballers, it's good enough for the other Iranians. And of course, our argument also, of course, it extends to people from other nationalities where we're not playing favourites.
Of course not. I mean, of course not, David. I mean, honestly, the global situation, like what's happening in the world at the moment, is disgusting. And with the war happening over in Iran now and the US, wouldn't it stand to reason that the Albanese government would grant more visas for people Iran?
Well, you would think so because you're a decent human being, Marissa. Yeah. But actually, it's the opposite. In March, when the fighting, the American-Israeli war against Iran had been underway for a few days, the government actually imposed a six-month ban on Iranians arriving on temporary visas. So they slammed the door shut. And temporary visas could include tourists, it can include students. So from March through till next month, no Iranians have been allowed to into Australia on temporary visas, and there's a very good chance they're going to extend that ban. But there's all sorts of legislation which has put Iranians at risk. So some while ago, this is, I think, 2 years ago now, or 18 months ago, the government brought in legislation that said if a government would not take asylum seekers back, people that the government was trying to get rid of, to deport, then they would ban all visitors of all descriptions from that country. And it was very obvious even back then that Iran was probably the number one target, because Iran will not take refugees back if they do not come willingly. So the government is trying to get rid of Iranian refugees. Iran wouldn't take them back. And so the Labour government threatened Iran and said, if you don't take these back, we will ban everybody from Iran, business people, academics, doesn't matter who they are, we'll ban them from coming to Australia. Now, I don't think they followed through with that threat, but it's hanging there. And it's a sign that actually the government is more concerned about keeping out people running away from danger than about giving them security. And so it's passed law after law, which makes it easier to prevent Iranians fleeing from the regime to come to Australia. Yet, you might remember back in February, one of the very first governments anywhere in the world to support the attack by America and Israel on Iran was the Australian government. So apparently that government in Iran was so bad that Anthony Albanese supported it being attacked, a war being carried out against it. But it's not so bad that the people who run away from it should be welcomed here in this country. And we see a similar pattern with refugees from Palestine, for instance, where really the government is going out of its way to avoid giving many people from Palestine safe refuge, even though we've seen a genocide underway for nearly 3 years.
Exactly. And in fact, the Refugee Council of Australia website indicates that almost 2,000 Iranians applied for permanent protection. Is that right?
Between 2013 and 2015. Now, some of those may have been accepted. Some of them may have given up and gone home and risked all sorts of horrible outcomes. Many of them are stuck in limbo. And this is an issue that's been raised by refugees themselves, Iranian refugees, Tamil refugees, Sudanese and others, over and over again over recent years, that they're in the country, they're on bridging visas that have to be renewed every 6 months. Sometimes they're
in
allowed
Australia.
To work. In Australia. Sometimes they're allowed to work, but sometimes not. Sometimes they're allowed to access Medicare, but sometimes not. Sometimes they're allowed to access education, sometimes not. The rules change every 6 months for some of these people. And they've had children here in this country who are now old enough to consider going to university, but would have to pay international student fees, which are an arm and a leg, to go to university. So these are people, in many cases, who've lived here and paid taxes for 13 years, but are still regarded as outsiders with no rights. And Iranians are amongst those numbers.
An absolutely despicable state of affairs and violation of human rights.
And the trouble is, if we have a couple more minutes, is that Labor is set to make things even worse. Tony Burke was scheduled last week to give a speech at the National Press Club on new measures to cut down on migration and on refugee rights. Now, that talk got cancelled. We're expecting it sometime in the next few weeks. We don't know exactly what Burke is going to announce, but we're pretty sure, and the media reports are pretty sure, that he's going to announce a reduction in migration. He's going to announce that people coming for family reunion cannot apply while they're in the country, which means people will then have to, who have been living here temporarily, would have to go back to the country they came from and go through a whole process of applying for family reunion. It looks like they're going to take away the right to work from asylum seekers and reduce their appeal rights. So some of the people we're talking about in this show may well lose the right to work, in which case they will be left totally destitute and reliant on charity. Now, why is Labor threatening that? It's not because a million refugees are queued up at the border. That's not the case. And if they were, they'd still have a right. But they're not doing that because there's a lot of refugees. They're doing it because of Pauline Hanson. And Pauline Hanson has obviously pushed the argument that migrants and refugees are taking jobs, taking houses, jumping the queue for hospitals or whatever the case may be. And rather than taking on those lies, and rather than taxing the rich and providing the services and the housing that people need, Labor is actually giving way to One Nation's arguments and saying, yes, there is a problem with migration. But when Labor cuts migration and Angus Taylor, the Liberal leader, says he'll cut migration, there's only one winner in that debate. That's Pauline Hanson, because she can say, I was the one who said it first. Now Labor and Liberal are trying to pretend to give a damn about this. So the argument to Labor is stop picking on migrants, stop picking on refugees, take on Hanson's lies. There isn't a housing crisis because of migration. There aren't lack of jobs due to migration. Migrants help generate jobs. They help build homes. Labor won't do that, and that's why, you know, there's a pressing need to build an anti-racist movement, not just for refugee rights, but against Pauline Hanson and One Nation. And the Refugee Action Collective is also involved in that process too. We've helped set up an organisation called Unite Against Racism, and we'll be having a big public meeting next month and a rally in October.
Fantastic. And no dates have been set for those events yet?
The rally, no. We're probably setting the date when we meet on Wednesday night. The forum is on Wednesday, the 9th of September at Trades Hall. And we've got four great speakers already lined up. We may have another one in the works. But it'll be Don't Let the Racist Divide Us, Building the Fight Against One Nation, on the 9th of September. It's a Wednesday night, 6:30 at Trades Hall. And if people go to the Refugee Action Collective on Facebook, you can find all the details. And I should just mention, if anybody's free in 2 hours' time, the Refugee Action Collective has another forum on tonight, which is taking on the racist myths about refugees. And we have an excellent refugee speaker, Radhi Baslot, who is a Tamil woman, an amazing speaker, a fighter, and Jasmine Fisher from the Refugee Action Collective. So if you want to come along to the Kathleen Sime Library at 6:30 tonight, you're very welcome at our forum this evening.
And if people are more interested in having a look in more detail about particularly the event in September, check out the Doin' Time podcast from last Monday, because we did an interview in full with David last Monday. But in the meantime, David, just one last question. Just wanted to clarify here. You were speaking before about the Labor Party doing, you know, threatening all these things. What time frame are they proposing to do all this in?
I don't think anybody quite knows, because that speech got postponed.
Right.
It's interesting. There is some debate that maybe the speech got postponed because there's some pushback inside the Labor caucus. Many Labor MPs represent areas with a number of migrants who obviously have a very big interest in family reunions. And so it's possible there has been some pushback on that issue. But this is speculation at this stage. I think if Burke makes this speech in the next couple of weeks, I think we can assume they will try and, assuming there are legal changes needed, I think they will try and wrap them up this year. That would be my guess. If there are administrative changes, they may actually bring them in very quickly indeed.
Many of these people have fled for fear of their lives and risked everything on flimsy boats to try to reach safety in Australia.
Absolutely. It is a disgrace. We should be welcoming these people. We should be giving them safe haven. These are people who can contribute to our society and to whom we owe the human solidarity of standing with them when they're faced with torture and the threat of death.
Let's actually give a call out to the Albanese government and to Tony Burke to stop ignoring the justified claims of other Iranian asylum seekers, most of whom have endured horrific sacrifice to reach Australia or Indonesia.
Absolutely. As the media release says, footballers need a level playing field, and so do all Iranian refugees.
Thank you so much for coming onto the program, David. It's been great having you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you again.
Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye. And that was David Glance from the Refugee Action Collective. I thought I'd have him back on for an update. We did have a cancellation of Tabitha Lean, who was very ill this week. But David was quite amazing in explaining what was happening. And they put out a really great media release. And the minister's happy to pose for happy snaps with the footballers. But his government has passed legislation designed to force Iran and other brutal regimes to take back refugees and to make it easier to deport asylum seekers. And there does need to be a severe improvement.
Are you ready to get lost in science this National Science Week? We'll join the Lost in Science team for our annual Trivia Night extravaganza at the Birmingham Hotel. Hop, skip and a jump away from 3CR on the corner of Smith and Johnson Streets in Fitzroy. Presented by the Lost in Science team with new and old science questions across a range of topics, picture rounds, group activities and prizes big and small to be won by you and your team. At the Burmy, corner of Smith and Johnson Streets, Fitzroy. That date again, Monday, 17th of August. To get your tickets, you can look up Lost in Science Trivia 2026 online or head to 3CR's website, 3cr.org.au. Get lost in science during National Science Week.
The People's Record is a podcast that looks at race, policing and public housing. Over five episodes, we speak with residents, lawyers, academics and activists about how policing has evolved and public housing communities are targeted. Listen to us on 3CR in August.
Have you experienced traumatic or distressing events and still live with the impacts? Would you like free, group-based support to help you recover? Introducing the MANTRA Project, an innovative University of Melbourne research study investigating how to help people heal. Participants will take part in either trauma-sensitive yoga or group cognitive processing therapy over 12 sessions. If you live in Melbourne and would like to find out more, visit restorecentre.org.au/mantra. University of Melbourne is a 3CR supporter.
Studio Take Care in Brunswick presents Take Care Social Club. Open every Friday night with a deluxe lineup of events including queer storytelling, 50s and 60s rock and roll, boot scootin', piano karaoke, tarot workshop and more. Free entry, queer vibes and community fun. More information at studiotakecare.com. Studio Take Care is a 3CR supporter.
Shane O'Mara wore mascara, Theatre Royal, Castlemaine.
It's time to complete your census. We need to hear from everyone to help plan for Australia's future. If you know where you'll be on census night, Tuesday the 11th of August, you can complete the form for your household as soon as you get your instructions. Complete the census for your household online, by paper, or with help from census staff. Whoever you are, we need to hear from you. Every answer matters. For more on how to complete, visit census.abs.gov.au. Authorised by the Australian Bureau of Statistics, Canberra.
A 3CR supporter.
And you've just tuned into the Doin' Time Show. You're listening to the Doin' Time Show, 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on the dial with Marissa. And the Victorian Government's Corrections Amendment Bill 2026, No Air in Prison Bill, seeks to strip away one of the few minimum protections for people in prison, the right to have at least 1 hour each day in the open air, by qualifying that it will be subject to the vague and elastic concept of operational considerations. It also seeks to deny compensation to those who are unlawfully deprived of fresh air. The No Air in Prison Bill is said to respond to a Supreme Court judgment handed down earlier this year, which found that a person in prison had been unlawfully deprived of their right to be in the open air as protected under Section 47(1771) of the Corrections Act 1986 Vic. The court held that this denial also breached their rights to humane treatment when deprived of liberty, as protected by Victoria's Charter of Human Rights and Responsibilities Act 2006. And we're going to be interviewing pretty soon, and I'm so looking forward to this, Kelly Flanagan, who I've had the pleasure of interviewing before. We were laughing and crying when she came in with Nina and also Georgia to talk about strip searching in Australia. So looking at that report. And we're going to be speaking with Karen Fletcher, also the CEO of Flatout. And I've interviewed her as well before, and I'm delighted to interview them and introduce them now. Hello.
Hello, Marissa. Karen here.
Hi, Marissa, how are you?
Good, all right. Getting there. It's so good to have you both, but we're going to be talking about a really ugly topic. So who wants to start off? And I believe that the Victoria's Charter of Human Rights is celebrating its 20th anniversary this year, and yet what are we celebrating?
Exactly. Well, yes. We're actually having a rally against this bill that's seeking to get rid of the right to a minimum of 1 hour in the fresh air every day. We're having a rally on Wednesday, and so it's not a celebration, it's a protest against the Victorian government doing this, as you said, on the anniversary of the Human Rights Charter. And it really raises the question, what is the point of having a Human Rights Charter when you can just pass legislation that gets rid of a most basic human right, like 1 hour in the fresh air each day for people in prison?
So, okay, so where's the rally? What's happening?
So it's at Parliament, on the steps, Spring Street, Victorian Parliament. On Wednesday, the bill is going into the Legislative Council. It's already been through the Legislative Assembly. It's going to the Legislative Council, and it's opposed by the Greens and the Progressive crossbenchers. So there will be a debate, but, it's bipartisan support by the government, the Labor government, and by the opposition, Liberals. So unless the government withdraws the bill, it will go through. And what we're calling for is for the government to withdraw the bill. It's getting a lot of support. We've just had an organising meeting for the rally today and heard that it's going to be opened by the co-chairs of the First Peoples Assembly.
Wow.
We've just had word that the National Preventive Mechanism, the body that carries out inspections for the United Nations Convention Against Torture, have issued a statement against it. It's signed off by other prison inspection authorities across Australia. This breach of human rights in legislation is drawing very broad opposition, and we're really hopeful that we will be able to convince the government to withdraw this bill.
And what time is the rally?
It's 12:45. So Wednesday, the 12th of August at 12:45 on the steps of Parliament.
Yeah, bring your banners, bring your bad attitude, bring all the things you need to be seen and heard on the day. Right?
And probably umbrellas, right?
Yeah.
Umbrellas and raincoats. Apparently rain should hold off in the afternoon, so we're hoping the rain will have finished by 12:45.
And are you two speaking? Go on.
Yeah, I feel like a little bit of water, though, Karen, is like it's just going to add to the momentum, right? Like, because it's I'm prepared to get like wet if that's what it takes, you know, for these bad policies to be
absolutely
introduced.
Now
it's a privilege, right, to be exposed to the weather.
It is a privilege.
Answer to your question about who's speaking, Marissa, Kelly is speaking because Kelly has actually been in those conditions at Phyllis Frost, the Dame Phyllis Frost Centre. That centre has been under lockdown. Kelly will explain, but has been under lockdown for years with people not being able to get access to open air. So Kelly's going to be speaking about that.
Yeah, and I really wanted to touch on that, I guess, like just a little bit today as
Let's do that. First of all, Kelly, just if you can just tell listeners what land you're from.
Yeah, of course. So I'm a proud Wiradjuri woman. I'm currently living in Naam, and I pay my respect to all the peoples of this land, and I am so privileged to be part of the communities down here, especially working on such important issues like this one.
Absolutely. And I think just to put things in context for listeners, so Karen is CEO of Flat Out, which Flat Out helps women in prison. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, so we support women, trans and gender diverse people to get out and stay out of prison.
Exactly.
So our workers are in the prisons all the time helping people to get prepared for their release, and then on release we're providing support as people get themselves settled and try to make a safe life for themselves after prison.
And I am totally a shining example of that, right, Karen?
And Kelly, you're also a member of Fig Jam as well.
I am a devout member of Fig Jam, the formerly incarcerated girls justice advocates Melbourne. We are a collective of formerly incarcerated women, run by formerly incarcerated women for formerly incarcerated women and gender diverse peoples, and I guess the work that we do alongside Flat Out is, you know, really, it really works alongside of the work that Flat Out does with keeping women out of prison and or helping them to stay out of prison and give them, you know, the opportunity to do, to move forward. And then Fig Jam is kind of a leg off that to give that peer support to people who require it when needed. So
fantastic. And what can you talk to us about what you went through in prison? I mean, we're now in a treaty era. And instead of seeing meaningful reforms that benefit all Victorians, all we have witnessed are rolling punitive things that are, you know, ill-informed and dangerous, aren't they?
And you're right, Marissa, you're so right. It's one of those things where, like, I was saying earlier this morning, it's like, you know, you constantly, like, beat your dog and be like, oh, why is it biting everybody? We run off that kind of same motto with prisons. It's like we'll forcibly lock people down. We won't give them their basic human rights, air. We'll strip search them. We'll treat them in this, like, inhumane way. And then we expect them to come out in community, which we know that, like, majority of people that go to prison are going to return to the community. And then they come with all of this trauma and you expect them to come out into society and be productive. I just, like, I'm not a scientist, but, I mean, it doesn't take a science to figure out that that's just not going to work.
Can you tell us about what you experienced? It must have been very traumatic for you not having fresh air.
It was, you know, like I spent 5 months in what they call the SWAN unit then, which was like solitary confinement, lockdown, but you're meant to get out, you know, for your hour a day, sunshine, you know, brain, air, exercise. And it was already back then, that was 2023. And back then it was a massive issue to be able to get out every day because the staff would just not do it. They would say they're too busy. They would say that, you know, there's not enough staff or whatever the excuse would be. But there'll be many times where a lot of the women down there didn't get that, including myself. And so I can tell you firsthand experience what happens in those circumstances, in that situation, is that you become so isolated that you start getting paranoid. With paranoia comes things like, you know, you don't want to eat, or maybe eat too much. For me, it was I didn't want to eat. I wasn't showering, I wasn't taking my medication, which then put me in a spiral of, like, being more paranoid. And then you have thoughts around the officers, like, trying to get you. And so it really creates an unsafe situation by not having access to outside of yourself. And so by them saying, okay, for safe working conditions for us, we may need to not, you know, not permit this time out of you. So, well, what you're actually doing is you're creating a worse environment by locking people down and not giving them that, because that's going to create more tensions between the prison officers and the people incarcerated. So I just don't think they've thought it through.
Absolutely. And I believe that there was a court case in January. Is that right?
Well, the court case has been going for a while. They made a decision, the Supreme Court made a decision earlier this year. It'd been going for a while. And that was a man who had been denied several rights under the Corrections Act, but one of them was access to fresh air for a minimum of 1 hour a day. It's an unusual situation in that he had private legal assistance. It's very, very difficult for people in prison to challenge these, you know, breaches of human rights, because there's not really a functioning prisoners' legal service, and you've got to have a lot of money. But anyway, this guy was able to do it, and he won the case, and the Supreme Court held that he had been denied the right, his human rights under the Corrections Act and under the Charter, and was entitled to compensation. And it's that decision by the Supreme Court has led to this bill. So the government, instead of saying, okay, the Supreme Court has found that we've breached human rights, we're going to stop breaching human rights, instead of that, they said, we're going to pass legislation that means this is no longer a human right.
Now that we can legally torture people, we'll change the law so we can do that, basically.
It's so disgusting to have this. I mean, there have already been 639 Aboriginal deaths in custody since the Royal Commission's final report was handed down. And don't you think that this bill would pose significant risk to social and emotional well-being and health outcomes?
Well, yes, I mean, absolutely. So much evidence, you know, in the Royal Commission into Aboriginal deaths in custody, that isolation, separation from nature and country, and the weather and natural elements, was a huge factor in the poor mental health of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in prison, and contributed to many deaths. The impacts on Aboriginal people are particularly damaging, but what this also means is that it's going to impact more on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, because they're more likely to be in prison because of racist policing and because of intergenerational factors and racism. They're more likely to be targeted in prison for solitary confinement and management units and all of these things, because mental health and physical health is already so poor. So you're absolutely right, Marissa. This is something that is going to impact First Peoples in Victoria more severely than other people, and also other groups, like people with acquired brain injuries poor mental health, trans and gender diverse people. And in the women's prison, we also find that women who are pregnant or postpartum are also more likely to be held in solitary confinement, and so it will impact women in those situations as well.
I like that you brought up the whole women aspect. I mean, not obviously the horrible circumstances, but we know that women, we're completely different to men. Like, men can... women, we need that communication, that connection. We need those things for our mental health. It's just... We know that women are more likely to harm themselves rather than create riots and things like that. So it's like, we really need to, rather than make one law across the board because we think it's right for that moment, and we need to really think about what this is going to cause, like the problems this is going to cause for women who are incarcerated.
And there's a quote from you that I was having a look at. I think it was in the Federation Community Legal Centres. And you say, Kelly, if you're expecting a good outcome, you need to think again, because all that's going to do is create more resentment, more anger, and these people are going to come out with some lifelong trauma.
That's spoken from true words. That's exactly how... That's me. That's me speaking from my heart, because I you know, to everyone that knows me after I got out, and it's like I am very traumatized. I still am by some of the things that I witnessed, I saw, and I experienced. And my, you know, I've never been one to go, oh, you know, I didn't deserve to, you know, whatever. I went to prison. That's part of whatever, and I did my time. But I had some serious human rights breaches in there, and it's like we're now going to legalize some of these. So that that officers can continue to do that, and that's the scary part. Is like we realise that there's a flaw here. We realise that the courts have gone, okay, we've got a severe breach of human rights, and rather than go, okay, look, we messed up. How can we make it better? How can we get it right? They're just like, ah, that's it. We'll just take away that human right. We don't need it. It's just wild. I can't even believe we're actually having this conversation.
Me either. I was just thinking the same thing, to be honest.
Yeah, so it's a knee-jerk reaction to a really serious, you know, the outcome will be serious.
What do you think, Karen?
Yeah, look, I think we're still in a situation where politicians are desperate to win elections, and they see a sort of tough-on-crime rhetoric as, you know, a way that they can do that, even where they know, we know a lot of politicians realise that what Kelly is saying is absolutely logical, and there's plenty of evidence that this, you know, breaches of human rights just make community safety, you know, reduce community safety rather than increasing community safety. But they still persist with this stuff because they think that it's a vote winner. And that's not just in Victoria, it's in the Northern Territory, in Western Australia, Queensland, around Australia, around the world. And then they will use things, you know, about, you know, very serious crimes committed by, usually by men, as justification for this.
Yeah.
Even though the vast majority of people in the prison system are not there for that kind of serious offending. They're there for a short time for minor offending, in and out of prison over the course of their life because of, you know, violence that they've experienced, alcohol and other drug issues, poverty, homelessness. These are the people that are impacted the most, you know, whereas the politicians will tell the public this is about dealing with serious risk from serious violent offenders, when in fact it's impacting particularly, as I said before, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, people with disabilities, especially brain injuries, people coming from poverty and violent backgrounds.
I find too, Karen, like when I went in and when I went into prison, I was treated quite poorly, and you know, by police and stuff. So I was really angry, really aggressive. And so when I went to prison, I was just really, really aggressive, really angry, and violent in some respects. And like for me, going in there and then having the support and love from places like Flat Out, Fig Jam, you know, kind of bring me back to being a human being, treat me with respect. I'm now in the community out here doing things. And it's like, if we give other people the opportunity to care, the love and support they need, rather than this like punitive, you know, constant punishment, there's a real chance for people to come out on the other end and be really productive and be like proud members of the community. But we're never going to be able to do that if we use this constant like punishment and, you know, inhumane treatment towards people. People are never going to really see their worth and grow and want to be productive. So, like, it's just, yeah, it makes sense to come at it from, a care, love and community kind of way rather than, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I really think, you know, Fig Jam is a really great example of what is actually a good alternative to punishment and prison, which is collectivity, care and community. And when you talk to people, you know, Kelly, like both of us would know about, you know, things that have come out of their prison experience. Mm. A lot of times people will say the most positive thing that came out of it was the relationships that they formed in the prison with other people who were in the same situation, that feeling of solidarity and care for each other. And it's amazing, you know, how much effort is now going into even breaking that down. People are surviving in there because they've got each other. And then there's this increasing use of lockdowns that means that social contact between people is reduced. And it's actually that social contact that, you know, gives people the chance to survive and the opportunity to you know, just improve their situation.
it really comes back to, too, I think, like, you know, when you are in there and you do, like you said, you thrive on having these connections that you build, and then you come out and, you know, sometimes we take those connections with us, which in my case, that's what I did with Fig Jam. When you're in there, it's like they are trying to, you know, stop you from having these connections by locking down individual units away from other units, and so that you can't create those connections. And that in itself, again, raises concerns about, well, why is it that they don't want people doing that? Why do they not want women to mix with other women? Like, what? Mm. It just, it intrigues me that, because for me, I love a good conspiracy theory, even though we know this is not one of those. But it's like, they do things for a reason. They do things because they don't want people to share information or, you know,
It's very true. I mean, I was deeply moved when you and the girls from Fig Jam came in to talk about the report of ending strip search in Australia, because it was such a beautiful discussion, wasn't it? I mean,
it was.
Yeah. I mean, even though it was horrible and really ugly, I think that lived experience is really powerful, and that's what we emphasize again and again on the Do and Time show.
Yeah, and we found too, like, I mean, you've got to see us as the four of us.
Yeah.
But there's a whole bunch of us. There's like 15 or 16 of us women who are all like that. We're connected by this strength, this love, this unconditional, you know, commitment to each other. And that's the beauty of what can happen if you start putting, you know, more effort into that care aspect rather than punishment. You know, we come on that show and we talk to the public about these issues and say, this is not working. You know, listen to us, because we are the people that have experienced. We're the experts here. And you can't argue with that.
As Narita Waite from the Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service says, I believe she's a CEO there, that the Charter of Human Rights is being overridden because this government doesn't want to ensure access to fresh air, a protected human right. And I love the way she says too that it's about securing votes for the Victorian election in November.
Which is disgraceful. Yeah, disgraceful.
Oh,
jeez. I mean, it's so blatant, isn't it? Everybody knows it now, that if they want to win votes, you've got to, you know, crack the whip on law and order.
What's going to happen? I mean, is the Charter of Human Rights able to not be overridden?
Unfortunately not, legally, the way they've written it. If they're going to not be compliant with it, they just have to make a statement saying, these are the reasons why we're not complying with it. And it can be, you know, as they say in relation to this bill, because it's not practical or convenient. I mean, how can a human right be a human right if it can be ignored because it's not convenient?
Exactly.
It makes my brain hurt so much. For example, a politician, I know they're much, much further up the high horse than me, but it's like, how can you sit there and be like, and say that this is a good decision? You know, without thinking about all the potential consequences of this, like, how can you think that this is a good decision? It's like they lose their sense of humanity once they get to a certain part, you know, within the government, or maybe they didn't have it to begin with, I don't know, but it starts to feel like that. Like, it's been, when you're working with politicians a lot, it's really clear that they are so out of touch, they have no concept of what works and what doesn't work.
I mean, how can fresh air be taken away? I mean, come on. How?
Unfortunately, it can be. Look, I think the reason why we're having this rally is because, you know, as Kelly said, even with the best evidence in the world in front of them, politicians will still make, you know, electorally, decisions that suit them, their electoral purposes. And we've got bipartisan support for this, the government and the opposition. The only thing that we can do is build knowledge and understanding and support in the community. So that these, you know, these sort of tricks of using tough on law and order start to not work against the electorate, you know, that people can pick up. Oh, you're talking about locking up kids, but we can't get mental health support and drug and alcohol support for our kids. you know, why can't we do that before, you know, they get into, you know, risky behaviours? Why is there so much money going into kids' prisons rather than going into mental health support for young people? These are the sort of things that we need to bring to the community's attention so that politicians can't get themselves elected on, you know, tough on crime
on false
policies
pretenses,
that make no
yeah.
sense.
Mm. Yeah. And I think, too, that's a really good point, Karen, because I've noticed in some of the work that I do outside, and not with, like, kind of the people that think the same as us, like, I kind of go into spaces where people are, like, really, oh, no, we think it's a great idea that, you know, you lock, you know, adult time, adult crime, adult time, that kind of stuff. But then I have a conversation with them and say, well, look, these are the reasons why this doesn't work. And then I give them, like, different angles around that, and they're like, oh, you're right, I've actually never thought about it like that. So sometimes I think that education is partially what we need to do to ensure that people are really having a look at it from both angles and then making a decision, because currently they're only just getting this, oh, community safety, but they're not realizing after that sentence these people are coming back to the community, and because they've been harmed so much more intense in prison, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, like how many of people in the prison have already also done time in a kid's prison?
Well, a lot. I think the numbers are so huge. Like, I don't want to give it exactly because I'm not sure, but they're huge.
Yeah.
They're absolutely huge. And also, what a costly exercise in public health funding responding to the trauma and harm inflicted from the Fresh Air Bill.
Yeah.
You know? It's just disgusting. And all of these things are connected. You know, you're talking about the kids suffering in prison. I mean, I know there's a real argument here. What about the home invasions? But, you know, even if there are home invasions, to stop them from invading homes or doing all those things, there need to be innovative programs for young people.
Absolutely. In fact, sometimes when they, you know, air a story on the news about, you know, a robbery allegedly done by kids. Sometimes, you know, there was one in particular I saw where the woman whose home was robbed said, well, what I want to know is what's happening with these kids? Why is this, why are they out at this time of night? Why is, you know, what's the story with them? She was really interested to know and understand. She wasn't just, you know, chuck them in prison, that's the solution. It was like, well, what is an actual solution? Like, what would really create a difference for these kids so that this wasn't happening anymore?
Yeah, because we're kind of acting after the fact, right? Like, there's nothing done prior to. It's kind of like, okay, oh, shit, you've done this thing wrong. Now we're going to, like, punish you for that. But there's no, once you're in prison, there's none of that rehabilitation. There isn't. It's just not. They can say what they want, but there's no drug counselling, there's no rehabilitation, there's no none of that stuff, counselling. But so, like, what are we doing before they get to that point?
Yeah, how are their families being supported? You know, you talk to their mums and dads, you'll find out they've been trying to get help for people. But
exactly.
There's no community mental health. You try to call the, you know, the emergency response team when your kid's having a, you know, mental health difficulty. All of these things are inaccessible to people, you know, having trouble keeping their kids at school, getting help with that. All of these things are failing, and yet the only thing that's put forward as a solution is put them in kids' prison with all of the, you know, problems with mental health, problems with education, kids' services, kids' support, not receiving attention.
And the problem with that too, I think, again, comes back to, like, you know, they say that, like, if you put, like, a child in prison for whatever offence, they go in and they're around other people who have probably committed other crimes. You know, maybe violent ones, maybe, and so they're learning these other behaviours while they're, you know, and it's like, how can that be a better environment than keeping that child in the community?
We can see how much good it does when we see how many of these kids then just go on to end up in the adult system. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
So we're nearing the end of our show. So access to fresh air in prison is a basic protection against cruel, inhuman and degrading treatment prohibited under international law and protected under Victoria's Charter of Human Rights. Are there any final comments that either of you want to make?
We would like to see you on Wednesday, 12:45, on the steps of Parliament for the protest against the No Air Bill. And it's going to be, you know, it's getting a very broad support. We're really excited about the amount of support there is for this campaign. We really need to bring as much pressure to bear on the government as possible to withdraw this bill.
Kelly?
Yeah, I think calm down, because there's going to be a heap of lived experience people down there, formerly incarcerated women. Have a chat. You know, if you're not sure about what's going on, come down and have a chat at what happens when you put love and care into people rather than these, like, punitive measures. Come down and have a chat. Ask some questions. Talk to us, you know, and you'll see what happens when we change the narrative. And, I mean, the other thing is, too, like, we're going to be there. Come down. You know, because if we don't stop this from happening, right, what's going to be next? What are they going to take next time if we don't stand up for ourselves and go, this is not right?
Exactly.
So, yeah, we have a lot to lose if we start letting them take things away piece by piece. So we would love you to come down and support us on the day.
Karen and Kelly, it was wonderful having you on. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us, Marissa. Thanks, see you next time.
Thanks a lot. See you soon. Bye. And that was Kelly from Fig Jam and Karen, Kelly Flanagan from Fig Jam, Karen Fletcher from Flat Out, speaking about the Charter of Human Rights and the Bill 2026, saying that people in prison cannot have fresh air. Thank you to all our guests for coming onto the show, and stay tuned every Monday for the Do and Time show from 4 till 5 p.m. And it's goodbye from Marissa. Bye.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.